This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 8th of June, 1954. The title of this lecture is Processes of Exteriorization. This lecture is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Okay, well, during this hour, possibly might be better if I told you a little bit about processes of exteriorization. You want to know something about that? That'd be real good. In any processing session by groups, we get a certain percentage of exteriorization. But people, to some slight degree, are a little bit leery of exteriorizing for the excellent reason that there isn't an auditor to pick it up at that moment, to drill it through, straighten out their perception, and do something for them in that way. And so group processing will bring a person up to a certain point about exteriorization that might take a little individual processing or individual attention to finish it off. However, the process which I was running for the next to the last process in the last hour, the 45 to 50 minute area there of three spots in the body, three spots in the room, is a process which, if run on a group for possibly a great many hours, would probably pick them all up if the auditor, exteriorize everybody, if the auditor would remedy havingness in between. You notice as you spot these spots in the room and so forth that you have a sort of a tendency to get a little bit leery. You notice that? Well, there we get down to a basic auditing rule. And that rule is pretty near as important as the auditor's code itself, which is quite important. But it's just a rule which governs techniques. And it works like this. When you spot a spot in space, stand by to remedy havingness. That's the rule. When you spot spots in space, remedy havingness. Now that's just it. Now supposing that we were working with a case who was having considerable difficulty. We asked this case, well, I'll give you an example. This case says, you say this case now, give me some places where you're not, you know. And the case says, well, actually, I'm not anywhere that so and so and so and so. You say, all right, just one spot where you're not. Well, I'm really, really not anywhere, you see. You say, give me one place, one place, just one place, you know, where you know for sure you're not. Oh, not any place. If you said to this case at that moment, now will you please find one spot in the space of this room, just one spot, and now we don't want you to put energy there, we just want an empty spot, we don't want you to put blue spots or green spots there, we just want to find a location in the space of this room, a precision location in the space of this room. Bing. Like that. This fellow say, all around, see, you look all around. Finally, he'll tell you, well, actually, it's not really possible to locate a spot except in relationship to objects. Now, I could get a spot in relationship to these two objects here. You say, well, go ahead and do that. He says, well, right there. Right there at that spot. Yeah, that's the one. At that moment, he'll start to feel a little bit queasy. You say, locate another spot in that space of this room. Well, yeah, that spot. Feels a little bit worse. locate another spot in the space of this room. That one. Now locate the first one again. Actually, if you weren't in communication with your preclear, it might miss you that he was getting sick. But he actually is getting sick. What's the matter with him? That is a very low-level case that I've been describing to you, one who gives you a consideration instead of a location. When you ask him for a location, he gives you consideration. Now, considerations are actually way above locations, but he's done an inversion. He's gotten down to locations and then gone south from there, and is a point where he's only into considerations. So when you ask him for a spot someplace, he can't look at. He's got to sort of think about it. And he's down below the effort band. And that's what we mean by figure, figure, figure. When an individual, when you ask him for a specific location, he says, Grady's store was down there, and so forth and so on. He doesn't say it's 2 miles down the road. You know, he goes into a lot of considerations. When we ask him for a precise spot in space, he gives us consideration. Why? Because he's below the effort band. Effort to him is his randomity. Effort to him is something which is out of his reach. He gets tired easily. He gets upset easily. He can be threatened and put in fear rather easily by a threat of effort. If you mention atom bombs or something like that to the fellow, just the mention of that much effort just makes him tired all over. See, it's just effort. Just a problem in effort, and that's all. But he's below that band. Well, look how far he is below look. I talked to you about the no to sex scale, K-N-O-W, and it's no, look, emote, effort, think, symbols, eating, sex. And then the scale goes south again on mystery, peer, misemote, all other determined effort. And Lord knows, I suppose, intuition. mysterious, unseeable symbols. Pecking rather than eating. Also crusades, how you mustn't eat. Also diets. Also a library full of Hauser. And as high as they get up toward sex is reading Havelock Ellis. All right, that's the whole scale in Birch, you see. There's something bad about everything on the no-to-look scale. On that second inversion, if everything somebody knows is bad, he has to go up to get to good sex. You see? And actually, as a case progresses, that is the way it goes. A case, by the way, doesn't go from bad sex to good sex. A case goes from sexual upsets or sex is bad to eating is bad to symbols are very mysterious to intuition to effort is horribly other determined to miss emotion entirely to peering faintly into the blackness to mystery to something good about sex to something good about eating. That is the way a case runs. It's fascinating giving them straight wire, listening to the responses, knowing where they hit on those bands, on the notice sex scale. You give opening procedure by duplication to somebody, and he will start hitting the high spots on this. Well, of course, this notice sex scale is an entirety which then repeats itself and repeats itself again and repeats itself again. Actually, the notice sex scale is a condensation of applause. Applause, attention. See? It's an attention scale. Sex is the most condensed of attentions. You see? And eating is pretty condensed. But eating is a condensation of symbols. You know, crunch, crunch. And figure is how we get out of doing some effort. And effort is, we'll go along this way till so that nobody will hit us with some emotion. And emotion is there so nobody will look. and you look so that you won't know. This scale inverts itself. In other words, it repeats itself over and over. And actually, the scale itself, notice X, is fairly loose the first time you go down the scale. Now we go down to a lower scale, and it gets more condensed as an entire scale, you see? And then the scale goes down again and gets more condensed as an entire scale. And finally, we get down to the point where sex is no, is eat, is symbols. You see, it's totally identified. The entire scale is just... And here, by the way, is the individual that you say anything to. It's a nice afternoon. He thinks of sex. It isn't necessarily true, however, that he always thinks of sex. He might think of knowingness. The way he'd think of knowingness is, what the devil are you doing thinking of a nice afternoon? You know, level of knowingness. And as we process people and get them up the tone scale, they go up this scale repetitively. We run opening procedure by duplication on somebody. We get two objects. We ask him to do those two things, walking from one to the other, just back and forth. Give him an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours of it. And first, he's just sort of apathetic about the whole thing. And then he'd come up to a point where he'll protest a little bit. Then he'd come up to a point where he'll real protest. But he's actually running this scale. And at first, he just hits the high spots. He's coming up so many scales so fast down there at the bottom, you see, that he just hits the high spots of these scales. And you will notice as he comes up that he, as he comes up tone, that he will interject comments on the subject of parts of this scale as he goes through them. Now, he doesn't know he's supposed to do that like a little soldier or something of the sort. He'll comment on it. If you could look into his mind, you would know what he's thinking about. You would get the thoughts that were going through, and these do measure up on the scale. In other words, as he picks up the book for the 105th time, something like that, he says, what do you expect me to do, eat it, you know? And puts it down, and he goes over and picks up the clock that you have sitting there, and he feels this around, and he'll say something about if he'd figured it was, or if he'd known how long it was going to take, or, you know, figure, and then he'll go back again, and he'll tell you, I'm getting tired. See, he'd come up through the effort band, and then he'll say, what the hell are you trying to do to me, you know? Come up through the emotional band, or he'd just be apathetic about it again, you see. And then you'll find the time or two that he'll really look at the objects, bing, bing, he'll really look at them, and then he'll sort of know what he's doing. And then again, here he goes again, and he will have some other part of the scale that he's hitting. All the time he's coming up scale. Well, you don't see it, obviously, hitting each part of the scale, because ordinarily when you start a person up this scale, the scale is so condensed that it's just identified one part of it to the other. So he doesn't come up in an orderly fashion for quite a while, but then he starts to come up the line in a very orderly fashion. Well, this is the behavior on that scale, and that scale is a condensed scale. Here you have an individual in this example of the person who spots space and gets sick, here you have an individual who is a terrifically condensed portion of this scale. And the second that you spot space, you give him space and you start to take apart what mass he has. And that's that. You see, he really is a firm believer in the got-to-have school. You know, he just can't function unless he has things from other sources, outside sources. He can't create anything himself, something like that. And he was, have him spot a spot in space, it'd be all right if you had him spot an object. His attention will fix on an object. But if he spots on space, you're just taking apart what mass this fellow has tucked away. You might say an object is composed of condensed spaces. And for purposes of processing, you could say the spaces are composed of uncondensed objects. Yeah, that's not true. But as we take apart a heavy mass, we would actually get more space. And that's what this fellow does. And the second you start to take apart his havingness by spotting spots in space, he feels it. He starts to get sick, tired, feels worse, so forth. He gets upset, in other words. This is, in essence, what is happening to a case, particularly if that case is going to start considering. You ask him a question, he considers. Then you ask him to spot a spot in space, and another spot in space, and another spot in space. You take that case, if you don't immediately remedy his havingness, you'll have somebody in your hands who's quite ill. You could probably run it through and just let him get sick. But it isn't too good a job processing. Now, how do you handle this? When you have him spot a spot in space, remedy is having this. If he's really bad off, if you have him spot a dozen spots in space, take a couple of minutes off and remedy is having this. How do you remedy having this? You have him mock up something which is acceptable to him and have him change it around until it snaps in. This is just a little bit different than you can do it in a group. Here's your preclear, you see, and you say your preclear. Now, let's mock up something you know you could have. And he says, oh, I don't know. I get a picture. I get a picture of a man. You say, okay. Now, that picture, by the way, is probably stable out there in front of him. You ask people in groups and group processing to pull it in, to pull the picture into them. That isn't what we're interested in. We want him to change now the quality of that picture until it's entirely acceptable to him, at which moment it'll snap in. So we say, all right, now get an idea of something you could have. He said, get a picture of a man. You say, all right, now just change the quality of the man around. You know, make him better or worse until he snaps into your body. Better. If he'd made the picture better, you'd see the picture would go and out into the far distance. But if he makes it worse, he makes the fellow into a tramp, makes him into a diseased tramp, makes him into a dead diseased tramp, who is already mostly dust, why, the picture will come in, pow, right into his body. It'll be very surprising to him. You see, that is the acceptable object. So we have him put up another picture of this same thing, and that snaps in, and another one, and it snaps in, and of a dead tramp, you know, mostly gone to dust or something, and it snaps in, another one, and it snaps in, another one, it snaps in, another one, it snaps in. The fellow starts to feel better. Funny part of it is the pictures are now not of as bad a quality. The picture's now getting a much better quality. The tramp does not have to be dead. He's only horrible and diseased. And that's snapping in, and that's snapping in. And now the tramp doesn't have to be diseased. He could just be a tramp. And the tramp snaps in. And then the first thing you know, fella doesn't have to be a tramp. Just a man is snapping in there. And this is remedy of havingness. Of course, as you get up the lines, what you're interested in remedying havingness is mass and nothing but mass. You don't care anything about its quality. Your preclear does, but he says he does. The only thing that's wrong with a quality is that he has so many qualifications, there are certain qualities that are not acceptable to him. A good human being, a healthy body, such things as this are not acceptable to him. But you've got to deteriorate the quality of them. You ask him to make them worse and worse until they snap in. Your remedy's having this. Very interesting, as a side comment, this individual that I described to you, who could only have a dead, diseased tramp, would himself be carrying along in the society doing all right. He'd be trying to keep himself fairly well dressed and trying to keep a job and so forth. He might be going along all right, but it would all be unsatisfactory to him. He wouldn't feel any satisfaction about this at all. Maybe one fine day, for some reason or other, maybe his wife leaves him or something of the sort. This gives him a wonderful opportunity. And boy, he says, now I've got a good reason for it, you see. And he takes the rattiest old clothes that he can find, you know, and he keeps himself rather badly fed and so forth, and is he cheerful about the whole thing? That is his level of havingness in life. He knows he can own it. He knows he can have that kind of an existence. But society itself continually forces an individual to have many things which the individual does not ordinarily accept. Society goes around, it says you've got to have a nice-looking car. That's because the Joneses or somebody have a nice-looking car, not because you want a nice-looking car, you see. You might want a much better car than that or a much poorer car than that, but society is saying to you, you should have that level of car. If your job, for instance, is that of a junior executive in a banking firm, if you were to drive a Hispano Suiza Sport Roadster painted a bright purple, I don't know. I think you'd find things pretty hard going on the job. There are certain kind of cars expected. Probably one of the smaller Buicks would be about the expected level of car. So people go around enslaved by society's demand on their acceptance level. Society dictates to individuals what they should have. and then insist that they should have this. You insist to a child, for instance, he has to have a certain level of education. He has to be educated in a certain way. That's not his acceptance level. He might want to know thoroughly on how you made bombs and burglar tools. This might be his acceptance level. And he'll be unhappy about learning until someday he happens to trip across something he really feels he wants to know. And that's his acceptance level of knowledge. What is a child's acceptance level of knowledge? When you're dealing with problem children, you could continually straighten them out simply by finding out what they really wanted. What did they really want to know? And then, by processing, improve the quality of knowledge which they could accept. Arithmetic, geography, history, they might tell you these are dull, but the fact of the matter is they're not acceptable knowledge to them because they are usually above the child's level of acceptance of knowledge. Child's level of acceptance of knowledge is entirely something else. And if a fellow could establish this, just like we improved this tramp, this mock-up of this tramp into the mock-up of a body, we could improve the child's acquisition of knowledge, what he really wanted to know. Well, let's go further than this and find out that an individual is suppressed continually. He feels by society's demand upon him that he have things well off, do this, do that, have things along this acceptance level, when the individual's acceptance level is either much lower or much higher than what the society expects of him. And so we have an unhappy person. You could define a person this way. An unhappy person would be one whose acceptance levels were continually being violated. And that would be an unhappy person. Well, it's an odd thing, isn't it, that this tramp, as we just had him mock up the tramp and the tramp snapped in, we didn't even have to say to this person any way at all. We didn't have to say to him, now look, make it a little better each time. It just got better, that's all. How did it get that way? Well, once upon a time he had a terrible fear of being poor, of becoming a tramp, and he erected a screen out there, you know, to defend him against diseased, poor tramps. And he got more and more forceful about rejecting these tramps until one fine day the screen blew in. It's mechanical what happened to him. And after that, what he has fought, he now accepts. And we see this as the dwindling spiral. Now, there's a problem computation sitting right on the top of this, and that is things will always get worse. They won't get any better. Now, your preclear may have this so bad that it'll even pervade his mock-ups. And that's an interesting case. He has this problem so bad. You see, everything's got to get worse. It's never going to get any better. And when he gets a mock-up, his next mock-up is worse. His next mock-up is worse. His next mock-up is worse, you see. The normal course of mock-ups, if you were just dealing with the screens and not with the problem, is they would get better and better and better and better and better. But where you have a preclear who got one good mock-up, one poor mock-up, no mock-up, or a good mock-up, a good mock-up, a good mock-up, a poor mock-up, a poor mock-up, a poor mock-up, black. You are actually getting somebody who was sitting right in the midst of this big problem that it always gets worse, it never gets any better. And that's his main unsolvable problem. He is limiting the number of mock-ups he can get and so forth just to prove to himself that it always does get worse. You could just run problem processing to procedure 30 on him and you would straighten this out. You'd find that one sooner or later. You could throw it at him if he didn't discover it himself. All right. But as we get back to spotting spots in space, we find out that an individual has become more and more a problem to himself on this. He accepts less and less and has to have more and more. He creates less and less, so the things he gets have to be otherwise acquired than created by himself. And yet at the same time, he can't have other things. Boy, has he gotten himself into a lovely problem. Isn't that a gorgeous problem? The less he can create, the more he has to have, the less he can have. And his acceptance levels are continually being violated. And we get an individual at last who has become normal. And here we find this preclear who can only consider he can't locate things in space. We force him to spot some spots in space. This, by the way, isn't really opening procedure 8C. Spotting spots in space is opening procedure 8D. another process. And as he spots these spots in space, you see, because his acceptance level is so poor, he can only have a small amount of things. He can't create anything for himself, he thinks, and he won't be able to until you change his mind on the subject. He is in the condition that when he spots a spot in space, he's uncondensing what havingness he has. And it's just like starving a man to death. You sit there and you have him spots and spots in space, and all of a sudden he is so starved he's ill. He goes past the point of starvation so quick that he hardly notices he's gone by it. The first thing he really notices is that he's sick. Well, to a lesser degree, this happens in an individual who goes to sleep. That individual is not as bad off. He merely sort of passes out when you take too many things away from him. You have him spots in space for a short space of time, and he starts to get groggy. Another individual, a little bit worse off, spots in space for a little while, and all of a sudden, bong, he might as well have been hit with an axe. He just really passes out. Why is this? Well, he thinks of himself as a fuel engine. Not a fool engine, a fuel engine. And he thinks of himself as a fuel engine which is running on the havingness which he sort of stokes into the boiler. You see, man has been a machine-made character here for a long time. Much earlier on the track, all societies were highly automatic, much more automatic than this present society. But this one will do. And his indoctrination is that you have to have fuel to run engines. He thinks of himself as running engines. He thinks of himself as his engine, as a body as an engine. He knows you put gas in the car, and he knows you put coal in steam boilers, and he knows you put electricity into electric motors, and you pay the electric company for the juice that runs the motor. And he's used the idea of the consumption of fuel. So he uses this havingness, you see, as fuel consumption. And you've just all of a sudden pulled the fires out of the boiler. How'd you make him do it? You made him uncondense some havingness by spotting some spots in space. And for a moment, he will feel himself getting warm, if he's really checking it. He'll feel himself getting warm, maybe get a little bit cold. You've altered his fuel ratio there, you see. Gets warm, gets cold, and all of a sudden boils off. And this is a problem in havingness, problem in fuel, and so forth. Man has just got himself so thoroughly mixed up with the engines, which have, as I must say, been an awful trial to him. It isn't until recent years, for instance, that man had an automobile tire he could really count upon. Actually, you really can't count upon a tire now, but if you kept your tires fairly new and only ran them 15, 20,000 miles, something like that, the number of punctures or blowouts which you'd have would be very, very few. You'd probably never have any tire trouble. Compare this, though, to the state of mind man must have been in on the subject of engines, you know, and keeping motors running or vehicles running or something like that, to 1919, when you were lucky to get off with 5 blowouts in 50 miles. About a blowout every 10 miles was about the proper ratio there, if your tires were real good and you paid a lot of attention to them. All right, let's take the engine itself. An engine in 1920, which would run consecutively for 100 hours without a major overhaul. This was an aircraft engine or an automobile engine, either one. That was a phenomenal engine, just phenomenal. You understand that man was accustomed to these engines giving him a lot of trouble. So Theta was in there up against engines, you know, engines that gave him a lot of trouble, and finally went into a switch to where the man was the problem, something else now had to figure out. See, as the engine became, was more trouble, so on. Nowadays, it would be a little bit better. People drive cars all over the place, and they don't even think about how cars run. You walk up to somebody very suddenly, and you ask them, how does an automobile function? They don't know. They never had one breakdown. In any society, people get up against this big mystery of the machine, you see, and they're liable to reverse on the machines if they give them too much trouble. And they are full well aware of the fact that they need fuel to run these machines. The body, by the way, knows that completely. It has to have fuel to run. Any kind of fuel from anywhere. You could steal the energy off your brother or eat a plate of beans. One way or the other, you're going to have fuel, you're going to run on fuel. That's that. That's the way a body runs. So an individual, when he comes along, you start uncondensing his fuel supply. Now, what's he going to do? He's going to quit running. Now, if you uncondense a pre-clears fuel supply too much, he'll blow the session on you. He'll do all sorts of things. He'll blow the session by passing out, by getting groggy, so forth. He knows he's running out of fuel. That's obvious. He is the problem. Must be. You're the auditor, so he must be the problem. And he responds in that fashion. It all breaks down to this, whatever much you want to say about it or however much you add up, that whenever you spot spots in space, you remedy somebody's havingness. Now, does it matter the quality of fuel which he is fed? Does it have to be really dense fuel? No. If a fellow could get the flimsiest, dark, not quite there mock-up and pull it in, that's good enough. Now, that's the one place in Scientology where the principle of certainty does not apply. At all other times, you apply the principle of certainty. The pre-clear has not answered the question unless he's certain that he has a reply. And you just insist on certainty on all things, but not on this remedy of havingness. Here's an example. A young man who was processed rather arduously, and he just decided there was nothing could be done for him. It was just all gone. It was too late. The school was out and so forth, and he came around to me, and he was practically reduced to tears and so forth. His case had been in terrible condition, and it was much worse condition than anybody realized at the moment he entered the unit. And he could get a flimsy, thin mock-up, the thinnest sort of a mock-up, of a machine. He had been a machinist. And he got, that is way back somewhere, he'd been this machinist. So he could get this flimsy picture of a machine. And I had him get one, and then I had him get four of them, and then I had him get eight of them. He finally could get eight of them. Just filmy, maybe they're there, maybe they're not there, you see? And pull them in on his body, and put them there, and pull them in on his body, and pull them, all of a sudden he says, what am I worried about? I'm not worried about anything. Fantastic. I processed him for 15 minutes, and he was good as gold, and he thought life was wonderful. What had happened all that week? Well, as happens in an early part of a unit, auditors not too well indoctrinated, and they're just doing practice sessions on each other. Somebody had probably had him spotting spots in space. I never even bothered to track it. Had him spotting spots in space, you see, and never remedied his havingness. That's all. So they just burned up all of his reserve fuel supply. Then they wondered why the pre-clear didn't run. We use that word run quite advisedly. The fellow thinks his wheels are turning or something. Now, there was a remedy of havingness, which immediately responded in the resolution of the case. Here's another case on the remedy of havingness, which is an interesting one. And a young man who was quite thin, rather cadaverous young fellow, came in, was trying to do some work on a more or less volunteer basis in the office, and he was sitting there feeling quite upset about life, but he was making lots of mistakes. Well, this fellow had been audited and audited and audited. No real professional auditor had ever audited him. He'd just gotten some auditing here and some auditing there, you know. And somebody'd run an engram half out, and somebody'd run another one all the way out, another engram half out. And he was in pretty bad shape when they started in on him. Well, this fellow, of course, had a rather poor man's orientation to begin with. He knew he couldn't have anything. That was one thing life had taught him, that he couldn't have anything. And there he was sitting facing a great big bulky machine which he was trying to run from the office, and he was getting quite sick. He was getting very bleary-eyed. So I took him and I asked him, have you ever run a machine like this? And he said, yes, I have. He said, I've run a code machine in the Navy. I ran it for a long time. Great big bulky code machine. There he is sitting there running this machine. Well, those kinds of machines rather have a tendency to get out of whack, and the machine he was running in the office got out of whack. So I asked him to mock up four of these machines, and he could get a filmy, unconvincing sort of a mock-up in front of him of these four machines, and pull them in, and four more, 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 and pull them in. And he said, I can put them up faster than that now and pull them in. I said, well, you go right ahead and do so. Which is, of course, they start doing that. The auditor command is too slow. They get to a point where they can throw up four and throw them in. Bing, 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 you see? And he started doing this, and all of a sudden he went into a raving convulsion. And I said, let's get four more of them and throw them in. And he says, I'm doing that. And going right on convulsing, see? And you're still doing that? Yeah, I'm still getting them. And he was off the chair by that time and onto the floor and writhing around and kicking the desks at odds and ends. And dying himself up in knots. And every time he could articulate anything, he would assure me that he was still doing it. And what do you know? Practically every engram this boy had ever had run on him came into full play and disappeared. Ran the cycle. Mysterious thing. What happened here? We had somebody who was very low on having this to begin with, and then we took away a little tiny bit more energy in running an engram. And that would finish him, you see. So he would hold on to what little flecks were left and all the considerations in the engram. He'd hold on to all these things, and as soon as he got any more having this, the engram would go into full restimulation. But did it matter what kind of mass he was being fed to throw these engrams? No, sir. As I fed him mass, his tonsillectomy turned on. Anything you could think of that had ever been run on him, it turned on, went into full bloom, blew out, and went the other direction. And he was through with them. And that was the history of the case. I haven't checked up that case particularly one way or the other, but he was in much, much better shape than he had ever been in, and he stayed in better shape there right straight along. What had happened to him? Some mass had been remedied. That was all. He knew he couldn't have anything, and all of a sudden there we'd remedied some mass. All the time he was being run on engrams, he was running engrams to do just one thing, eat them. Now think of that for a moment. Why do preclears have these engrams pulled in against them like this? Is there any real reason? Yeah, there's a real reason. They want to be a problem. That's the basic reason. But what's part of that factor on the problem? What's one of the factors which go in to make up the problem? They're pulling them in because they are mass. There is a certain quantity of beingness in them. Sometimes you'll run a preclear, and by golly, you'd think what you were running on him was delicious. He'll just sit there, you know, with a beautiful smile on his face, with electronic engrams and every other kind of engrams popping and blaring and screaming around his head. He's happy. Tastes real good. Well, here's your problem. In running engrams, there were two kinds of people. And one kind of person didn't have to have his havingness remedied, and so he got very well. And the other kind of person was already fresh out of havingness, and so the more you ran an engram, the more frantic he got. So there were two kinds of cases, rather unexpectedly there, weren't there? Now, the funny part of it was, if you ran the engram well enough and relaxedly enough, what he actually did was mock up a new engram. So this was what cases were doing, sort of under the counter and out of sight, when I was auditing them in the early days. I would persuade them, finally, that they could run the engram. What they'd really begin to do eventually was mock up a new engram, you see, and run it, which was parallel to the old one. And so they'd have 8 or 10 more engrams than they had to start out with, which made them feel fine. Now, there was the bug in Dianetics. The only real serious bug in Dianetics was the remedy of havingness, where we got an unpredictable factor turning up in a case. It was because havingness itself had been violated as a problem. And all we would have had to have done with anybody, it's horrible at this late date to realize this, all we'd have had to have done with our preclear, he was lying there, you see, and he couldn't quite run it, or he was getting stuck in it, you know, or he couldn't quite contact it, or he looked all the time at his grandfather's face in the coffin. Any one of these manifestations that would all of a sudden cause an auditor a great deal of bafflement, what did the auditor have to say at that moment? He'll say, can you get a picture of anything? And the fellow says, well, I guess I could get another picture of my grandfather's face in the coffin. Yeah. Good. Now get that and pull it in on your face. Get another one, and 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 another one, another one. All of a sudden, the preclear says, to hell with the old man. That's the way it would work. All you would have had to have done and the only amendation that would have to be made to Dianetics, the modern science of mental health, to make it workable across the board is, would be a little section on the remedy of hattiness. Whenever you have any difficulty with Preclear, remedy is hattiness. Get him to mock up something and pull it in on himself. The book then becomes totally workable from one end to the other. Fact worth knowing, isn't it? Well, I meant that when I said it, that I said this some months ago in the PABs, that we now had all the factors which solved Book One. We could do anything with Book One. Now we knew everything across the boards that would solve and get us up to Book One. Anytime we wanted to, we could solve the problems which were still residual in Book One. Well, that's not a very serious thing to ask an auditor to do, is it? You could teach him how to run an engram, and it does do him a lot of good to run engrams. Every once in a while, even today, a professional auditor all of a sudden will knock off doing some procedure or other, and finally his Preclear is having a lot of trouble with some kind of an engram, and just run it. And what he really should make sure of is that the Preclear, rather than running the engram, he'd have more success if he had the Preclear mock up another engram right alongside of it, which was just like it, and pull it in on him. See, that would run the engram. So that would be all you'd had to know. Actually, if you could have gotten a Preclear to get, he's all black, he knows he can't get anything. If you got him to get the idea of a black planet or something sitting in the blackness and push it in on his face. Just a filmy idea of it. And then another black planet, and another black planet, and another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, and more, and more, and more, and more, and more. All of a sudden, the fellow would have started to get mock-ups. Here is your point of entrance on any case that we were having any difficulty with. What is really the matter with a psycho? A person who is psychotic may have lots of things wrong with him, but the most thing wrong with him is his havingness is all shot. He knows he can't create anything, and he knows he can't get anything from elsewhere. He knows he cannot acquire. That's the main thing he knows, and he knows he cannot create to supplement acquirement. So he can't have. So he burns up his existing energy, and the next thing you know, he's sitting there in an engram, which he is pulling dry, and it gets so tight, you might say, he picks up such heavy facsimiles, finally, that all he can do is dramatize them. See, the engrams begin to command him instead of him commanding the engram. This is Dianetics, the modern science of mental health, come to life. It could be fished out right now, and with one small chapter added on the remedy of havingness, it would be totally and easily workable by anybody. I mean, you'd still do it. Now, actually, all you'd have to reprint of Dianetics, modern science of mental health, would be Book One. It was in three books, and if you just printed Book One and then added to it a nice chapter on the remedy of havingness and so forth and reissued it, you'd have it. You see how far we've come towards simplicity when you could state in a chapter how to remedy any and all kinds of manifestations, which we observed here in the last 4 years. All right, let me go over that again. How would you remedy havingness? Just how would you go about remedying havingness? There are two ways you could do it, one of them more successful than the other. The way which is more successful is you remedy havingness with attention to acceptance level. That would be one kind, one way to go about it. See, you pay attention to the fellow's acceptance level. And the other way that you remedy havingness would just simply just remedy havingness. You don't pay any attention to acceptance level at all. Well, it's a little more successful, and it does a little more for the case to remedy it according to acceptance level. See that? Now, how would we remedy it on acceptance level? We'd ask the fellow to get a mock-up of something, no matter what it was, which was acceptable to him. Now, we wouldn't know whether or not it was acceptable to him until he'd actually mocked it up, and then we found out whether or not it snapped in on him. Now, we would also consult with that his rejection level. What kind of a mock-up could he reject? All right, let's say this fellow, he could get a mock-up of a man. Rather dark and thin and bad, but he could get some kind of an idea of a mock-up of a man out in front of him. Now, there'd be two ways that you could handle this as having this. You could get its rejection level or its acceptance level. and you'd probably deteriorate the mock-up, make the fellow more of a tramp and so forth. And by the way, you can nearly always hit dust of where the body has been. The body of this mock-up is now degenerated into dust, and the dust nearly always will come in on the freer like a Kansas cyclone. The dust of a body that's been there is quite acceptable to him. He'll settle for the dust of a decayed body. After you've done that for a little while, he'll accept the bones. And after you've done that for a little while, he'll accept a body sort of decayed. And after that for a little while, he'll accept a body which is a perfectly good body. And after that, he'll accept the body that's moving after he's accepted motionless bodies for a while. Well, the other way to go about it is, how would we fix it up so it'd become a rejection level mock-up, different than acceptance level? A rejection mock-up would be improving its quality. We get a picture of a man, rather filmy, you see, and then get the idea that the fellow was very well-dressed, and then he was very handsome, and he was very strong, and he had $2 million in the bank. That would just about do it, see? That markup would go, it would leave. It would actually not just disappear, it would simply go into the far distance. It would just go, zoom. Now, we can ask any pre-clear to mock up something and then improve it and improve it and improve it until it becomes utterly unacceptable to him. We say, well, mock up a car. The fellow mocks up an old rattletrap car, and it just sits there. It's above his acceptance level of cars, but it's a car. And now we say, well, get a 1954 model. And at that moment, it's just liable to depart. He's liable to see it fly away. See, it just leaves. You say, all right, if it still sat there, you said 1954, you would say, all right, now get gold instead of chromium. Solid gold instead of chromium, and diamond plate the steering wheel. It might still sit there. And now put your monogram on the side of it there in rubies. Might still sit there, you see. And you'd say, now have a blonde chauffeur and a blonde footman, and the car'd leave. Now, just way above his acceptance level right there. As you improve it, in other words, it becomes less acceptable. As you deteriorate, it becomes more acceptable. That's because of this basic problem. The way you make a problem utterly unsolvable is it always gets worse, it never gets better. That's what you say, and that problem, of course, is an unsolvable problem. So this is at the bottom of acceptance level, is that problem, and this has to do with these mock-ups. In other words, you could run acceptance level processing with havingness and remedy these cases rather rapidly and easily, but the cases would still remedy, you understand, if you didn't pay any attention to that consideration, just had the fellow mock up four anythings and pull them in. One anything, you see, one at a time, but then four and then eight when he finally could do it, and pull them in and pull them in and pull them in. The problem itself, that it will always get worse, would eventually blow. The problem itself would blow because he's got it mocked up in energy. And its considerations would also leave. So the way you'd solve a case that you were having any difficulty with would just have them mock up anything that they could get a picture of and just have them pull it in on themselves. And have them do it again and again and again, and then more quantity of it and more quantity of it and more 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 and more. And all of a sudden you're liable to see that birth that you toiled over with this case 2 or 3 years ago fly up and hit you in the face. It's been run out all right, but he ran it in and ran it out again on the available mass. Now, the funny part of it is people at first don't create these things which they're pulling in on themselves. They rob the bank. They ask to get a black mock-up, and they'll get a little patch of blackness over here, another patch there, another patch someplace else, and they put them together and get black mock-up. That's conservation of energy, what they've run into there, which is a nice problem, too. Let's just take the energy we have and make something out of it, which is quite a nice problem. You could just ask them to be that problem and have somebody figure on it for a while. Be the problem of only having just so much and having to do with it. He'd say, oh, my goodness, my mother or my father or something. You could knock it out as a problem, or you could simply just knock it to pieces by remedying the havingness of it. Now, it takes a lot of patience on the part of an auditor sometimes to remedy havingness, because you would be surprised how much an individual actually can absorb in terms of energy, and is a tremendous amount. What you're interested in the remedy of havingness is mass, not quality. The quality makes it easier for the pre-clear to accept. It's like putting orange juice in cod liver oil. But Our problem here is to get mass. And the more mass you can get in from more quarters, the better off you are. And you want this preferably from a 360-degree periphery, from below his feet, behind his back, from his left, from his right, from above his head. We want him pulling things in, not from just in front of him. We want him pulling them in from everywhere. All right? How do we remedy mass? Just that way, with the most mass possible. So we would graduate him, wouldn't we, as soon as we could, up into actually mocking up planets, stars, black stars, and galaxies, and having packed those together and push them in and pack them together. Now, what if the fellow was exteriorized? Same deal. Only we don't have him push him into the body necessarily. We have him pull him in on himself. If the body's having any real difficulty, have him mock them up and push him into the body. But what happens on this fact that at first they start out robbing the bank to get these havingnesses, robbing themselves? You know, they don't create the energy. They see it over someplace and reuse it. That blows, too, on the remedy of havingness, or I say you could blow it directly. The fellow believes he can't create at the moment. But that will blow, too, because it's just an engram system that is telling him he can't. All right. A thetan exteriorized is run very often on spots in space. You know, change the space processing. You ask him, be here, be there, be here, be there. You got him out of his body, and he's running all over the universe and so forth, and the next thing you know, what'd you do to him? Well, the more you chase him around, the more energy he knocks off. You might say he starts getting these corners chipped. He has no mass to do that with, but he does have machines that are running. And while you're drilling him, he doesn't give him any energy. And so they start to pull the energy straight out of him. And so you have to remedy his mass. It's very easy to do. You just say, put up 8 anchor points around you and pull them in on you. Put up 8 more and pull them in, 8 more and pull them in, 8 more and pull them in. And he occasionally will get so enthusiastic that when he pulls them in, he'll explode. You know, he pulls them in too fast. Well, you don't want him exploding. You just want him to pull them in, see, and just keep the mass, that's all. Pull them in more and more. You'll find that your boy was stuck on the track every place where he lost a large amount of mass. You'll find out he's stuck on the track where he lost a big ship, where he lost a big car, where he lost a big wife. This is totally a matter of mass. When the Thetan's having problems with this universe, he's having problems that have to do with mass, space, and energy. And, of course, energy is an object that is fluid, you might say. And an object is energy that is condensed and solid. And the space needs anchor points, you see. And so where's the guy going to get the anchor points? He starts taking apart his existing mass in order to put up the anchor points. So we run into this as a problem with a preclear. We ask him to spot spots in space, and all of a sudden he gets groggy. So a whole therapy presents itself here, which is the therapy I recommend to you for the processing of almost anything. And it just simply runs this way. You have him spot spots in space and remedy his havingness. Now, why do you have him spot the spots in space? Well, obviously, you can't keep this preclear with great masses pouring in on him forever. You know, he'll get sooner or later something called an avalanche. Oh, planets by the billions start to pour in on him. It's the most flooding. It'll worry him. But he'll watch old facsimiles appear and explode and masses of stuff coming in on him. He just feels like he's being drowned in mass. That's all right. He can stand it. But how do we give him any space? What's the answer to space on this? We can remedy his havingness, but there's something else here. That's space. We've got to give him some space. So along with the remedy of havingness, we give him some spotting spots in space. Now, we could run a whole preclear's life just by remedying his havingness. We'd bungle through somehow. See, I mean, we'd get there. He'd feel pretty good after we finished up. You might have to do this to him for hours and hours and hours, 20 hours, 30 hours, something like that. Do nothing but remedy havingness. You know, every time you get him a session, and pay a little attention to acceptance level, make it a little more interesting to him, and try to start things, get things snapping in automatically, and things like that. Just working with him, you know, to get him to accept mock-ups of masses, and get him more dense and so forth until he got in pretty good shape this way. He would get in good shape. Well, there's a little faster way to go about it. And that is having spots in space and then remedy havingness and then spots in space and then remedy havingness and spots in space and remedy havingness. And you can get very significant about this. You say, spot the space where you were born. Where is it? You say, point to it. How far is it? Now, you're not pointing at a little picture you've got around you here someplace, are you? You're actually pointing to the physical universe spot where you were born. Yes, that's right. Okay, now spot the spot in the center of this room. By the way, you probably start out putting spots there, you know, blue spots or red spots or something silly like this. You just want a spot, empty space. And you say, spot the center of this room. Now spot the place where you're born. Now spot the center of the room. Spot the place where you're born. Spot the center of the room. Spot the place where you're born. Spot the center of the room. Okay. Now mark up a planet and pull it in. Mark up another planet and pull it in. Mark up another planet and pull it in. Another planet and pull it in. Four more and pull them in. Four more and pull them in. Pull in some from the back. Pull in some from the back. Spot the spot where you were born. Spot the center of this room. Spot the spot where you were born. You say, gee, you know, my whole school days is passing in front of me here. And you say, that's fine. Spot the spot where you were born. Spot the center of this room. What other spots could you indicate? You could say, spot the spot where you were married. Spot to this spot. Spot that spot. You don't care what spot you spot with him. And actually, you could have him spot spots where fictional incidents occurred, as far as you're concerned. And you'd still clean up the whole universe for him. You know, he's not moving into these spots. He's just sitting where he is, wherever he might be, lost or found or in his head or buttered all over this part of the galaxy. You're asking him to spot a spot in space and then spot a local spot that he's absolutely sure of, and then maybe Chicago, and then a local spot in Chicago, and a local spot in Chicago, and a local spot in Chicago, and a local spot. The exact center of Chicago, 1,000 miles up. Now, you just sit right there in that chair and spot that. Yeah, I can do that. That's right. I got the spot. How far is it? Oh, it seems to be, it's several feet. You say, now, look, I want you to spot the center of Chicago, 1,000 miles up. Okay, now, how far is that? You mean that Chicago? Oh, yeah, well, that's about 1,800 miles. All right, fine. You'd say, okay, now spot the center of this room, spot the center of Chicago, spot the center of this room. Okay, now, it wouldn't matter what you picked. You say, mark up the Empire State Building and pull it in on you. Mark up the Empire State. He'd say, that's not in Chicago. You say, that's okay. Mark up the Empire State Building and pull it in. Mark up Earth and pull it in. Mark up the Moon and pull it in. Mark up a lot of stars and pull them in. Anything you want. Now I'll spot Chicago, spot the center of the room. He said, you know, I don't know what you're doing to me. He said, but this is, I'm just starting to remember all kinds of things that I never thought of before. Yak, 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 yak. You don't care what he says. Keep a two-way communication with him. Be polite and have him spot those spots in space and remedy his havings. Now, factually, a foolproof process. If you care to do it as an individual auditor with a priest. If you want to clean up somebody's accident. He just had an accident. He's lying there in the hospital with six broken legs or something, you see. And you want to straighten him out. One of the mildest ways you could do it would be to say, give me some places where it's not. What are you asking him to do? You're asking him spots in space, aren't you? Some place where the accident isn't occurring. So you had to take his attention off. But that puts him spotting spots in space. So you'd certainly better mock up something that's acceptable to him right afterwards. Or, you know, a battleship. And you say, well, I wasn't on the Missouri when it went aground in Chesapeake Bay. I was just in a car wreck. And you say, mark up a battleship. You say, okay, I got a battleship. Mark up another one. Now pull them in on you. Now mark up another one, and another one, and another one, and pull those in on you, and another one, another one. Now spot the spot, spot the center of the town. Of course, you could get terribly specific if you wanted to and say, spot the spot of the accident. Now mark up a wrecked car and pull it in on you. But why get that specific? It's just a question of spotting any spot, any place in space, and remedying heaviness with any mass he can mock up. And the less specific you get, the better off you are. That's a frequent. So you just had an automobile wreck, you want to do an assist? Spot some spots in space, remedy some heaviness. Spot some spots in space, remedy some heaviness. Spot some spots in space, remedy some heaviness. Say, my goodness, I feel wonderful. It wouldn't happen quite that fast because you'd have to talk to him. It'd take minutes. And that's a fact. If he was in fairly good shape to begin with, you'd probably have to process him for half an hour or an hour or maybe 2 hours even, because, you see, his attention is foggy. He has long comm lags and other things get in your road. But whatever you were doing that process. Now, that is a process so basic that it doesn't have a name. That lies back of all the kinds of processing that you would care to do. Now, you know, here and there where you have fouled up the preclear or otherwise, or have had some trouble with the preclear or something of the sort, and go back and get him again and try that process on him. And you'll find out, as unspecific as it is, as strange as it is, that you will get lots of results with that process. Of course, this doesn't say that your preclear won't have problems he isn't going to throw in on you. And if you were to take this and couple it with procedure 30, you would get rather faster results. But all you would actually have to know how to do was spot spots in space and remedy havingness. And if you can do those two things, boy, can you audit. Thank you very much.